Welcome to episode 24 of the My Movie Minute podcast. My name is Charlie, and in this podcast, my co-host Mark and myself take turns to pick just 1 minute from the movies that mean the most to us and talk about what makes those minutes so special. This is the final full episode of the series, but please do tune in next week for our traditional series wrap-up episode, where Mark and I will be ranking the minutes from this series. We have really appreciated all the listener contributions this series, and if you do wish to join in the chat or keep up with the My Movie Minute news, please do follow us on Instagram at My Movie Minute. But for now, please just sit back and enjoy this wonderful episode of My Movie Minute.
What about you, bruh?
What about me?
Do you ever look at someone and wonder what is going on inside their head?
Who are you?
Are we enemies?
Why am I on this wall? Let me explain. No, there is too much. Let me sum up.
Trinity, Eli, you boy.
We mostly come at night. Mostly.
Welcome to the last episode of My Movie Minute of Series 3. And actually, I believe also our, if we include all the kind of little mini episodes we've done and specials and intermissions, it's our 30th episode. So there's a bit of a...
Is it really?
It is indeed.
We've hit another decade.
Absolutely. And I am here as always with my friend in movie nerdness, Mark. Hello, Mark.
Hello. I'm happy and sad to be here. Happy because we're about to talk about one of the greats. Sad because we'll probably take a little bit of a break after this one.
Indeed we will. I'm going to talk about that a little bit more in the next episode. We're going to give you an idea of the kind of plans that we have moving forwards. It's weird for me to say the last episode of Series 3 and then talk about the next episode. We do a ranking episode every series, which we both look forward to recording because it's where we get to kind of argue about which films make the cut and which ones don't from what we've talked about.
Yeah.
But that's going to be next week, and so do tune in for that. But in terms of an actual movie minute, this is the last episode of the series. And I tell you what, I've got a nice bit of feedback from a regular listener that I want to share with you just to wrap up this series a little bit. And it's from a listener called Short Circuit 2 on Instagram.
Excellent yet problematic film.
Yes, I believe his actual name is Stu, and he contributes quite a lot to our little sort of challenges and questions that we throw up on Instagram.
Thank you, Stu.
Yeah, he gives quite thorough answers.
He also is probably my equal in Sandra Bullock fanhood.
Indeed. He gave quite a thorough answer to the question about what would make the best Sandra Bullock-a-thon, which we resolved last week. So if you didn't hear that, listen to last week's episode.
Spoiler alert, mine was all of them. Just every film she's ever made.
Except it wasn't, because I did force you to name seven.
Yeah.
And it's those seven that Stu / Short Circuit 2 has got a bit of an issue with.
Keep an eye out for an ear out for our next podcast, Seven Sandra Seconds.
So here's message read, and this is initially in response to our Matrix episode. This week's episode, the Matrix episode, is one of my favourites so far. The film choice is fantastic. And great to hear you both enthusing on a film it's become fashionable to bash. So I like that.
Yep.
That lovely positive feedback is nice and we really value it.
It is. And as the person who probably brings the less cool movies to My Movie Minute, I'm going to say I appreciate it when someone acknowledges that the rubbish movies can be powerful too. I don't think either of us would argue that The Matrix was a rubbish movie, though. I think we'd both think it was amazing.
But on the Sandra Bullock-a-thon...
Oh, dear.
He then says...
Stu.
That said...
Oh, dear.
I genuinely shouted, "Demolition Man!" out loud during the discussion on Sandy B. Movie Marathon.
Oh, be well, citizen.
Outrageous!
Nah. Stu, we can arm wrestle for it. It's a lot of fun. It's very kind of lamely quotable. And you can't say that you support movies that it's fashionable to bash and then not go all in on Demolition.
He gave a long list of movies previously that should be on the Sandra Bullock-a-thon, and he did veto Speed 2. He's the one who vetoed Speed 2. So you can't veto Speed 2 and then also veto Demolition Man. So it's fair game.
You get one veto. You get one veto, Stu.
And also a bunch of other listeners or followers on Instagram did put forward Demolition Man. That's why it was on the list. So it wasn't from the head of Mark. It was supported by our community.
We are a highly researched and extremely well supported Demolition Man loving podcast. And if anyone thinks that they have to tune out because of that, like, that's politics and you're entitled, but I'm not budging. Stu.
But thank you for your lovely kind words and for anyone who's
I think we'll redeem ourselves on this one though.
Also thank you for anyone who's commented on anything, any of the kind of bizarre random questions we've thrown out on Instagram, and therefore, you know, built up a little bit of content in this first little chat that we have before the movie minute throughout the whole series, because this is the last time we're going to do that for a little while. But
and actually got us one of the minutes.
It did indeed. Yeah.
So if you think there's a minute that we need to get into, like, send it our way. And also, you know, if it's a great minute, come on the pod.
Yeah, you know, that's where Aaron Brockovich came from this time.
Exactly.
Yeah. So let's get into your minute this week, Mark. It's a great one. I am very interested to see how on earth you're going to condense this epic minute down into a description that doesn't give anything away. But you are the master of doing so. So if anyone can do it, you can. Please, can we have your wonderful, nostalgic, epic, brilliant minute without any spoilers, without the name of the movie or any of the characters? Off you go, Mark.
Blue smoke curls and billows and fills a cave. From the smoke, a spectre appears. The spectre rubs its neck before picking up a young man, hanging him on a wall by his waistcoat, and removing its head and rotating it twice. The spectre materializes a microphone and begins a game show host's interview with the young man, who's bemused as his name appears in lights. In quick succession, the spectre becomes a Scotsman and then a dog before dematerializing into a puff of smoke, rematerializing and sliding its hand over to a carpet that proceeds to join it in an elaborate handshake. The spectre approaches the young man, towering over him, before a crisis of confidence over its weight leads to it grabbing its belly and shifting poses. The young man interrupts and is slapped on the head by the spectre, who places a mortarboard and diploma into the young man's hands before transmogrifying into first a bodybuilder, then trapping itself in a cube, then turning into a ventriloquist and its dummy, and finally in a flourish duplicating itself several times before announcing to the young man what it really is.
10,000 years will give you such a crick in the neck. Hang on a second. Whoa! Whoa! Does it feel good to be out of there? I'm telling you, nice to be back, ladies and gentlemen. Hi, where are you from? What's your name?
Aladdin.
Aladdin! Hello, Aladdin. Nice to have you on the show. Can we call you Al? Or maybe just Din? Or how about Lobby? Sounds like, here, boy. Come on, Lobby.
I must have hit my head harder than I thought.
Do you smoke? Mind if I do? Oh, sorry, Cheetah. I hope I didn't singe the fur. Yo, Rugman, haven't seen you in a few millennia. Give me some tassel. Yo. Say, you're a lot smaller than my last master. Either that or I'm getting bigger. Look at me from the side. Do I look different to you?
Wait a minute. I'm your master?
That's right. He can be taught. What would you wish of me?
Be ever impressive.
The form contained. But never duplicated. Genie of the lamp!
10,000 years
will give you such a crick in the neck! Wah, wah, wah. Wah, wah. Oh, man. Like, there's so much joy in that clip.
That's it. Absolute pure joy, without a doubt. Normally, I'd say at this stage, can you reveal to anyone who hasn't guessed what the movie minute is from? But the title is in
it's
the clip.
From Ingmar Bergman's The Seventh Seal. Nah, of course it is.
It's right there in the clip. It's Aladdin. Of course it's Aladdin.
Or maybe it's Lad. Or maybe it's Din.
Ding, or maybe ding, it's ding, Laddie.
Here, laddie, laddie, laddie.
And you're now about to spend another 30 minutes listening to two grown men quote a children's cartoon. I feel like you've really found a minute that contains a heck of a lot of movie here. Like, how do you condense so much joy, so much fun, and just so much sort of just silliness into 60 seconds? It's insane.
So the answer to all of those questions, and to most questions, would be hire Robin Williams.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Wind him up and let him go. That doesn't stop until the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Except for those moments when Robin Williams does his sublime kind of tear rolling down the cheek moments, which even as a blue goateed, top knotted genie, you get. It's from that point on, you're at that pace.
Yeah.
Plus music, plus like bonkers visuals, because like we're at an animation turning point as well.
Yeah.
Oh my God, like everything about that minute is the start of something new.
Yeah, you've talked about it before. So when we did our Lion King episode in series one, you sort of had a little think about what would be your Disney minute.
Yeah.
And that was yours. You know, I'm with you on this one 100%. It is one of the greatest Disney minutes, and you've already put a nail on why it's great.
So we're done and it's solved, and it'll be at number one in the rankings. Tune in next week.
But what I do want to talk about a little bit more is, actually, we normally kind of give a context within the film. So let's do that, even though I think most listeners know where this sort of sits.
So this is in a film made of, an animated film made of one of the oldest stories in the history of storytelling, as recorded by humans. The moment when Aladdin rubs a lamp and out pops a genie to grant him three wishes.
Indeed. And how did you, or when did you kind of come across this epic minute of wonderfulness? Was it when it first came out as a little boy?
100%. Ladies and gentlemen, well, not as little as you were. let us travel back in time to 1992. Jurassic Park was in the cinema.
You talk about Robin Williams and drama teacher Mark starts bringing out lots of kind of impressions and voices.
I can't even help it. This is from that period of like early cinema going by choice, like cinema going that wasn't like, it's Ben's birthday party, you've got to go to the cinema and watch Transformers.
Yeah.
This was the, what does Mark want to go and see in the cinema? And Disney movies were definitely events.
Yeah.
This was glorious. This was the first album I ever bought, or the first cassette album. Nice. I ever bought.
Which is why you've been singing these songs from Aladdin ever since you decided to do this minute.
I can do them forwards, backwards, and never not be given joy by it. Yeah, this was, and this is something about Robin Williams as well. Like, I knew who Robin Williams was. Like, the genie's the genie. The genie is, there's just overwhelming amounts of voice talent in this film.
Yeah.
And it's so quotable, and it's so enjoyable, and it's so well told. And like, if anything, it's so incredibly well edited.
Yeah.
That they've fit all of it in and probably cut out so much.
Yeah.
And what's left is like storytelling gold.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I think, like, for me, this is up there, if not higher than, well, actually, for me, it's much higher than, but it's up there cinematically with the introduction of Bond. Like, if you think about, like, an iconic movie character played excellently and as has been shown, really, by casting an incredibly funny guy in Will Smith, but who hasn't quite managed to do it as well, you know. The genie is Robin Williams is the genie.
Give me some Tassel.
Exactly. Like they are inseparable.
Yeah.
In that respect. So
the other thing, and like 1992, groundbreaking in terms of visual effects for Jurassic Park. Mm. But in terms of the animation kind of leap, the magic carpet and the 3D effects that they started playing around with in the magic carpet, mixed with this kind of traditional animation. You're a world building guy. You made that very, very clear.
Yeah.
Like the world of that film is so integrated. It's
Yeah, absolutely. Like I just remember the tiger face in the desert being like quite mind blowing because it was, like you say, it was kind of a 3D, three dimensional yeah. animation rather than kind of pencil. I mean, we talked about it a little bit when we talked about Lion King, because I was sort of giving Lion King a lot of credit for bringing that kind of adultness to Disney. But like, yeah, you're right. The magic carpet ride felt like an actual ride.
Yeah, the ride in through the lava and the trying to escape.
Yeah,
and you know there was I'm pretty sure it was computer generated or computer animated. Mm. But at the same time, that's never bigger than the movie. That's never like a set piece.
Yeah. So questions I often ask, but don't have to this time, include, like, why this minute? I mean, it is the epic Genie minute. I mean, was there any chance you were going to pick any other minute for this movie?
Yes.
Oh, really?
There are, like, because I love this movie so much, like, it's the same with The Matrix.
Mm.
I don't think this is the best Genie minute.
Oh, but really?
I don't think there's a bad Genie minute.
Okay.
I think that there are like impressions that he does that like lock me into the moment so massively that it's wonderful. There are visual moments of the film that are better, but there was I really love, and it's the same with last week, I really love moments in movies that broaden the scope of what's possible in the world or the universe.
Yeah.
Both inside the movie and outside. And the Genie as a piece of narrative, as a character within a cartoon, did things that one could only happen in animation.
Yeah.
Could only happen in combination with Robin Williams.
Yeah.
And felt so tied into what that character should be.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's so much balance going on. We're talking about 11, 12 year old kid enjoying references to a TV show host who I've never seen on TV.
Yeah.
You know, in Ed Sullivan. Like having a passing understanding of Jack Nicholson from various things and like loving it. Knowing only through kind of cultural osmosis who Peter Lorre is, and yet that kind of I can't bring people back from the dead being the right thing in that moment, and they animate it perfectly and they give them the eyes and the features, and I understand it. There was like there are so many of those that stagger me, and then just like one of my favorite moments of the film is Jafar banishes Aladdin.
Yeah.
And they do the Buster Keaton gag at the end of the world where that tower starts rolling down the hill.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you think it's going to kind of roll over him.
Yeah.
And he ends up crouching down in a window and it rolls past him.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's the Buster Keaton house falling on him gag.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's so emotionally rich at that point and it's so beautifully animated. Yeah. Like there's the terror and the stakes of Jafar becoming a genie.
Yeah, that's done really, really well.
And then the joy of itty bitty living space.
I mean, yeah, and we're back to Robin Williams again, aren't we?
Yeah,
like that kind of callback to well, just his wonderfulness throughout this whole film.
And if Robin Williams doing the Genie is quotable, the next most quotable thing in that animation, and I'm going to move away from the mic because it's another impression, is, oh my God, I think I'm going to have a heart attack and die from that surprise. Gilbert Gottfried Iago was, again, just perfect.
Yeah.
And animated beautifully and hilarious.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there are parts of that where I love it more than the Genie.
Yeah.
Because it's the yin and the yang. It's so perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Lion King is rubbish.
I've had a Robin Williams minute of my own sat on a list that I have at home of, you know, of minutes that I'd like to talk about on this podcast for a while. Part of the reason why I haven't ever brought it forward was I kind of knew that eventually one day you're going to bring Aladdin to the table. I also knew that there was a possibility that might not happen, because when we talked about Aladdin during The Lion King, you said actually it's hard for you to revisit because of Robin Williams.
And yeah.
I know there's a sort of emotional charge of that in terms of like of how big a part of you he is and how tragic that is. But if I'll share with you one second, and again, I think it's a movie, a minute from a different movie that does a similar thing to what you love about Robin Williams' performance as this. For a long time, I've been wanting to talk about the bit in Mrs. Doubtfire when he says he's at he's going to a job centre, and she says, "What do you do?" And he says, "Oh, I do voices." And she like looks at him. And then you get a minute of a montage of him doing, I think, about 7 or 8 different voices, just one after the other, boom, 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 boom. And like that, for me, I've been wanting to bring that minute for a while, just because I just think like that and this one are a minute of just Robin Williams being incredible in a way that I've never seen anyone really do as well. I mean, the only person who even comes remotely close in recent memory is possibly Jim Carrey, but it's a different thing.
It's a very different thing. I want to acknowledge the physicality of it as well, because it's like we've all, there's a lot of kind of B-roll Robin Williams in the voice studio, but I'm thinking about if you've ever seen The Birdcage.
Yeah.
There's a moment in The Birdcage, it's one of my purely joyful moments, where Nathan Lane is rehearsing a song and the dancer that's supposed to be like with him while the song is going on is just not giving a crap. And Robin Williams runs up on stage as the director and the husband of Nathan Lane. And he says, his instruction, his direction to the dancer is he's like, "I'm just supposed to sit here," and we're like, no, it's a cornucopia of dance, it's fussy, it's Michael Kidd, Martha Graham, Madonna, and he does dance routine to go along with each of them. It's this kind of mass kind of physical ball of energy, and then he finishes it with, "But keep it all inside," and it's that kind of the interplay of absolute kind of out there bonkersness and timing.
Yes. Yeah, indeed. And whilst we're just kind of gushing over kind of how unbelievably awesome Robin Williams is, lest us not forget that, you know, 1 hour photo, Insomnia, the times that he's been asked to not be funny and to be something else, he absolutely nails that as well. Like when he's given roles where it's not about being big, larger than life and doing a bunch of impressions, he's incredibly like
Goodwill Hunting.
Yeah.
Like Good Morning Vietnam is Robin Williams being Robin Williams, but is the depth is in there.
Yeah.
Dead Poets Society, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then like Jumanji.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah. Yeah. Which is just another. I mean, we've talked a lot this series about a-thons. I mean,
when you watched the Rockathon,
yeah.
When you watched your Rockathon, your Dwayne Johnson-a-thon.
My Dwayne Johnson-a-thon.
And you were watching Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle.
Yeah.
And they get to that moment where they meet the pilot.
Yes.
And they go into the treehouse.
Yeah.
And they're carved into the treehouse Alan Parrish was here.
Yeah.
That did me in.
I can see you getting quite emotional about this, actually. And I remember, like, I'll talk for a bit, because so you don't have to talk. I do remember, like, when we talked about Lion King, you were really clear about the fact that this is an emotional thing for you. And I don't think we have or ever will talk about, like, we've talked about films, even in this series, that have made me quite emotional. But But to have that kind of that connection, that relationship with an actor,
And I don't think I'm the exception.
No,
I think that there are a lot of people,
yeah,
who felt like Robin Williams was in their head. You know, Robin Williams was in the room.
Yeah, and I don't recall, apart from maybe Bowie, a celebrity death that has kind of impacted, like, the world, it seems, in the same way that his did. Because it sort of has, I think it's sort of changed the shape of mental health education in a way, because I see so many things that say, like, this is the face of depression, and then you have a photo of Robin Williams with his hands up with a massive smile on his face. Like it is, and this is supposed to be a joyful minute, but it's worth sort of seeing that these, the mask that can be worn can mask such kind of depth and things like that.
I think I even know my first Robin Williams minute.
Okay,
or moment.
Yeah.
And it stuck with me forever. It's Mork and Mindy. And it's a moment where in Mork and Mindy, he has come down from outer space, but his spaceship is an egg. And like Mork and Mindy is, turn the cameras on, let Robin Williams be Robin Williams. And it's so clear that that's what it is. But he walks into, it might have even been Happy Days. Like it might have been from his appearance on Happy Days. But he walks into a kitchen and he sees a bowl of eggs on the counter and he grabs one, he holds it up in his kind of over-expressive mime hand. And then in just the most glorious timing, throws it in the air, but not a lot in the air, just enough in the air like he might launch it, and then lets it like crack on the counter. And at the same time says, "Fly, my friends, be free!" And he times the splat perfectly for the voice.
Yeah.
And his face of disappointment when the egg doesn't fly off, and the, you know, it makes a mess, like it's everything together.
Yeah.
And that little formula,
yeah,
of him making a stupid thing perfect has been what I see in all of his stupid things ever since.
Three Robin Williams things from my life spring to mind immediately. And I think most people of an age will have similar things that make Robin Williams a part of their life. My first cats were called Mork and Mindy. That's the first one. So the second one is me and my sister used to sit in the back of the car on holidays and pride ourselves on the fact that we could quote Aladdin from the start of this minute that we've chosen to the end of the movie. We knew every single, and we used to just roll it off. We used to just roll off the script.
Start from 10,000 years and then...
And finish at the end, yeah. And then the third one, and this is something that I realized recently, and one of the reasons why I almost brought Mrs. Doubtfire to the table at some point. I rewatched Mrs. Doubtfire for the first time in many, many, many years recently. And I realized that the end of Mrs. Doubtfire, where Robin Williams talks about divorce, like my parents divorced when I was younger, and nobody at school, no teacher told me about what that was and how like that kind of balance between, yes, it's
but
crap,
Mrs. Doubtfire and some dinosaurs did.
But like, this is crap, but like there are some things. And he addresses that. And I only realized retrospectively that I was ready for that change in my life because I'd spent many years previous to that watching Mrs. Doubtfire. Mm-hmm. And what I thought was just a bunch of silly voices and funny men dressing up as women was actually preparing me for something that was going to happen in my life. And like, from a cat, couple of cats named Mork and Mindy, through to being able to quote things, through to him being able to teach me stuff about life, like just through his awesomeness. Like he is, like, I'm not surprised you're getting emotional talking about him. Now this is supposed to be the minute where we talk about pure joy.
Yeah.
And you've chosen the most fun minute of any movie and we've gotten like deep and emotional. So let's bring it back to Aladdin. Let's bring it back to this epic minute of it. Like, is this something that you kind of revisit often? Is this something that's just ingrained in your brain?
I love voice acting and I love listening to people talk about voice acting and I love kind of digging into the voices behind the characters that I adore. And in particular, the ones that are so good at multiple characters. So half of my YouTube recommendations are videos of people standing behind a microphone doing funny voices. So I revisit minutes like this or chunks from Aladdin. Like if it comes up on that, like it's a must watch no matter how many times. I've probably done laps of all of the YouTube videos that have him recording the genie. I haven't watched Aladdin in full in ages.
It's worth doing. I think me and my partner went through a bit of a kind of Disney rewatch phase. Actually, it wasn't a Disney Plus thing. It was a few years ago. We just decided to buy a bunch of the DVDs.
And, from the guy who did a rockathon, I couldn't believe that.
Yeah, and we like Aladdin was the highlight. Aladdin and Lion King, they were the highlight. So you know, I don't think. There's that many people who would argue that like those two sit in the top five Disney's. But yeah, it's worth going back and rewatching all the way through, because even though you know everything that's going to happen and nothing's a surprise because you've seen it like me probably a million times, like pure joy, those words, pure joy. It's pure joy from beginning to end. And it's just such a lovely way to spend an hour and a half of your life just luxuriating in that again. If you can get over the kind of emotional chargedness of it. Let's spend a time.
I don't think Robin Williams would let you stick on a moment too long.
Exactly, yeah. So we've sort of talked a little bit about this before we came on the mic, but let's jump out away from this version of Aladdin for a bit. Have you dipped your toe in the stage show, the remake, the Will
Smith stuff?
I've
seen bits of the Will Smith stuff, but the entire kind of build up. And I qualify myself as a Will Smith fan. I think he's exceptionally charismatic, and I thought that the casting was excellent when I heard it. And then I watched a bit of it, and there was very, very little, it felt, of the energy that they had in the animation of Let Robin Be Robin, of Let Will Be Will. Like the genie had no street in him. The genie had no... didn't have the playfulness of Will Smith. It had like genie playfulness, and it felt like he was dipping in and out, and the songs removed all of his charisma.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's it. It was a strange directorial choice in a way to get, you know, Guy Ritchie to direct a musical, because I think a musical director could have done a better job. There's one reason to potentially look at the remake, and there's probably one reason to potentially look at the stage show. I agree that Will Smith, as awesome as he is, and as probably the only choice that there was really to even try to do the genie justice, he's just not Robin Williams. But I think this the one thing that the live action remake does add, and that I liked, and I almost valued from seeing it again, is adding a bit of a dimension to Princess Jasmine, who is another character that I love and another Disney character, and easily probably the coolest of the Disney princesses, except for maybe Moana. But like, there's a bit of an update, and she is a bit, there's a bit more three dimensions to her, which
Fully would have watched The Rock as the genie, though.
Yeah, interesting. That's an interesting choice. He probably would have done something different, but
yeah, a little maybe goofier or something like.
Yeah, that's not a bad shout, actually. but yeah, the stage
very show, expensive, I'm sure.
The stage show, which again I think lacked certainly some of the magic of the animation. Friend Like Me on stage, and the way they did it was phenomenal. Like, it's worth the fee to go and see it just to watch this on-stage version of Friend Like Me. And actually, the casting of the genie, I don't know his name, in the stage show was also phenomenal. Like, I think he did everything new. He gave it a fresh spin, and it's never going to be Robin Williams. But
there's a limit to what you can do when you can't actually make like four heads appear on your shoulders or turn your face into Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, yeah. But what they do on stage with Friend Like Me was mind-blowing. It's possibly one of the most impressive kind of musical moments in a stage show that I've seen.
Second new podcast coming soon.
What, my musical minute?
Memories. We'll do Cats, we'll do Chicago. Cabaret.
Right, here's how I'm going to end this podcast, Mark, and this is how I'm going to end this series. I'm going to give you the forum to give me a couple more epic genie moments of your choice into the mic for listeners.
I've done most of my favorites, so I absolutely love, I can't bring people back from the dead.
That's good.
I don't like it. All right, Sparky, here's the deal.
I can't believe it. I'm losing to a rug.
Tell her the truth. Come closer. Oh, too close. A little too close. There's the moment of genie crisis when Aladdin goes under the water and the genie is trying to bend the rules so that he can save him. And this is like the imaginative leap and the godlike genius award of Robin Williams. Is nothing in Robin Williams's head said, yeah, but submarines weren't invented yet. Nothing in my head watching it went, hang on a second, submarines weren't invented. It was just his mind, his imagination went, what's the scope of response that feels appropriate to this level of stakes? And it's like, smash the big red button on the wall, awooga, awooga.
Yeah.
And that's what comes out. Yeah, and his ability to pitch to your emotions,
yeah,
to where what you're ready to receive in that moment hasn't been matched by anyone.
Thank you all for listening to this episode and this series of My Movie Minute. I hope you all agree that Mark chose an absolutely wonderful way to finish the series. As we mentioned earlier, we will be back next week with our traditional end of series ranking episode, so watch out for that. And in the meantime, just remember, it's not what's on the outside, but what's on the inside that counts.
Oh, by the way, do you have any special skills?
Oh, yes, I do. I do voices.
What do you mean, you do voices?
Well, I do voices.
Yes!
We've come to this planet looking for intelligent life. Oops, we made a mistake.
We're happy to be in America. Don't ask for a green card.
I want you in the worst way.
Well, this is certainly a rough meeting, and it's not going very well for me, I'll tell you that. Hey, boss, give it a chance. She's going to loosen up any moment.
Look at me right now, Moneypenny. I want to undo that bow and get to know you.
I'm crazy to make a deal with you.
Nancy and I are still looking for the other half of my head.
He's an idiot. You're doing it. I'm sitting on a gold mine.
Don't make me smack you, sweetheart. I'll do it.
Figaro.
I do a great impression of a hot dog.
I think I've unlocked a box. What we're going to do is we're going to end this episode with just Mark fading out
as
he does Robin Williams impressions.
I'm losing to a rug.